The following podcast is provided to you free, as is all our content, at drhoffman.com. If you'd like to listen, help support Intelligent Medicine, and get great values by shopping at our supplement store, go to drhoffman.com and click on Shop, then click on the store. Thanks, and enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to another edition of Layla Weighs In podcast here on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast Network. Could I call it a network? I'll check with Dr. Hoffman on that. Anyway, I welcome all of your questions. I'm getting questions from all kinds of people, from lay people, from colleagues. I'm thrilled to read all your questions. You can email your questions for those of you who would like to submit any questions to me regarding nutrition, wellness, health, integrative medicine, functional medicine. You can submit your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. That's radioprogram@AOL.com. So here we are. It's February. It's cold. I'm very, very much looking forward to spring. All right. Let's get to some questions. I've got a couple of questions here from Kristen. Hi, Kristen. Thank you for your questions. And she writes, L-glutamine is supposed to be very, very good for gut healing. It's in a lot of medicinal foods and supplement formulas. And I am curious as to your recommendations about when to take glutamine, with or without food. I typically recommend the powdered version as it seems easier to take, and I've heard this is also more bioavailable. What are your thoughts? Thanks, Kristen. I agree with you about the powdered version. And depending on what people are taking it for, whether it's for gut healing, because L-glutamine is the preferred amino acid by the epithelial cells, the surface cells of the gut. So it's very important in intestinal health. And I find that taking 1 to 2 tablespoons daily, even more, you could titrate up that dose, even more throughout the day, I like it away from food, quite honestly. There are some people who will get some diarrhea with L-glutamine, and those are the people who should either reduce their dose, maybe start at a teaspoon and work their way up to a tablespoon or two a day, or maybe those people should be taking it with food. So, actually, two ways to take it. Another reason to take L-glutamine, and there's been some very interesting scientific research, although many of you have heard me talk about this before, it can really, really help you with sugar cravings. I'll tell you, if I had a nickel for every time a patient or a client walked in here and said to me, I'm a sugar addict, I'm always craving sugar, I would be a millionaire by now. And by the way, I always say patient or client, right? What is the difference, you're probably asking? Well, according to one of my professors, this was back when I was an undergrad, the difference is a client is somebody who doesn't have a medical condition, is interested in health and wellness, in prevention, in optimizing their health. A patient is the sick person. So patient with a medical condition or previous surgical history or other conditions that need to be taken into account or helped with medical nutrition therapy as a patient. That person recommends a therapeutic diet. Okay, but I digress. Coming back to glutamine. The importance of glutamine in gut healing, but also for sugar cravings. Now, Kristen, besides the powdered version for the gut healing, which I love, I do like, because some people find it easier to carry the capsules around if they're taking it throughout the day. For sugar craving, for my sugar craving people, I have them take a capsule, a 500 milligram, you know, maybe 1500, 2000 milligrams, say 3 times a day for a total of 6000 milligrams a day in between meals can help cut sugar craving. Now, having said this, the other way that I tell people, my very sugar-addicted patients and clients, is that even if throughout the day they are still craving to take some additional glutamine, maybe a 500 to 1,000 milligram capsule, of glutamine, wait 15 to 20 minutes, and then go eat something. When I say go eat something, I don't mean a candy bar, obviously. When I say go eat something, it means go eat that chicken you didn't finish at lunchtime, or the chicken salad you were having, or your salad with some avocado, or with some beans in it, or something like that, or your salad with sliced steak. That's what I mean. You need to have some protein and fat, because that will also help to stabilize your blood sugar in a way to keep the sugar cravings down. I'm going to digress a little bit more, because glutamine, because it's so important with sugar craving, another important mineral I find with sugar craving is chromium. And chromium polynicotinate, chromium picolinate, I do like the chromium GTF at drhoffman.com, and generally 200 micrograms 2 to 3 times a day, like one with each meal or one with two of your meals, is the way to take it to help stabilize blood sugar. By stabilizing our blood sugar, that can help to diminish cravings. Now, a few other words about glutamine, because we have a conundrum here about the importance of glutamine, because it's a conditionally essential amino acid, meaning when the body really needs it, it makes more of it, it helps to get it from a supplement, from diet, all of that. But glutamine has also been shown in some of the scientific research to possibly feed a cancer. So how do we deal with this conundrum? Let me tell you the ways in that glutamine may help to feed a cancer. Now, we know glutamine is important in maintaining gut integrity, in influencing our immune system, because it actually influences, it boosts glutathione production. But another thing that happens with cancer cells, if there's plentiful intracellular glutamine supply to produce glutathione, cancer cells are able to resist an increase in oxidative stress. This is also called oncogenic stress. So the increase in the glutathione in the presence of cancer, or an actively growing cancer, a metastasis, may be working to the cancer's benefit. This is really, really a big question mark. Now, what do we know about a hallmark of rapid proliferation of cancer cells is the metabolism of glucose and glutamine, which converts to lactate for fuel. You've heard me say that cancer loves sugar. I talked about it two weeks ago, about possibly the best diet for cancer and to decrease our reliance on sugar and too many refined carbohydrates. But the cancer cells may also feed on glutamine. If you've watched the YouTube of Dr. Thomas Seyfried, he also discusses the glutamine connection to cancer. However, this is an ongoing conundrum, and I'm citing several different studies. One is from the website of Trudy Scott, who's a certified nutritionist. I love her newsletters, and she says in a paper in 2010 titled "Glutamine, an Indispensable Nutrient in Oncology, Experimental and Clinical Evidence," in the great majority of the research, glutamine supplementation in cancer patients improves host metabolism, meaning the cancer patient's metabolism, and clinical situation without increasing tumor growth, it has been found. And the potential mechanisms of glutamine's effects include maintenance of the gut integrity, mucosal integrity. It improves our immune competence. It helps the boost of natural killer cells. That also has to do with glutathione. It's a bit of a double-edged sword, isn't it, what I'm reading to you? And the inhibition of cancer cell proliferation, glutamine helps to increase apoptosis rate, which is cell death rate, all of that. And the other thing is, it's been hypothesized that the way that cancer cells are feeding on glutamine is it gets into a glutamine feeding loop. so to speak. And that's why there are so many recommendations for cancer patients to steer clear of glutamine. But, you know, cancer cells are also very efficient, and they really do harness the power of glutamine for machinery for their cell growth. And they're always going to have enough from glutamine that is produced in the body. You know, right, that glutamine is also produced in the body. We produce glutamine endogenously. It's not an essential amino acid, meaning we have to get it from dietary sources. It means that it's conditionally essential, meaning when our body needs it, it's good to also get it from a supplement. So, but our body does make it in much smaller amounts. So what happens is, because the cancer cells are on this glutamine eating loop, it's our healthy cells that become depleted and lose out. So when low glutamine becomes low glutathione in the body, our natural killer cells are impeded. They don't have the ability then to defend our healthy cells and to promote immune function, which is absolutely necessary in the cancer battle, as you know. And you know, one of the problems with standard chemotherapy radiation is that it wreaks havoc on the immune system. And glutamine, along with other antioxidants, can only help to boost it. However, this depletion of the glutamine, because the cancer cells are gobbling it and there's none left for our healthy cells, because our glutamine, more than 90% of the body's glutamine is in our muscle, that becomes heavily depleted. And what happens with that depletion, a common occurrence in people with active cancers, is cachexia. That's that muscle wasting, that loss of weight that occurs. You know the difference between a healthy loss of weight with somebody who's on a diet to lose weight and optimize your health, and the weight loss that happens with a sick person, with a person with cancer. We call that cachexia. It's literally a muscle wasting. And because this glutamine is being lassoed by the cancer and our muscles are being deprived, that may be the reason for the occurrence of this cancer cachexia. Wow. All right. So in this regard, by taking more glutamine, again, a double-edged sword, it's a conundrum. What do we do here? Trudy Scott does go on to say that some practitioners still feel glutamine supplementation is very safe to use, up to 10 to 30 grams a day for a month, and then titrate it down to a maintenance dose. All right. Let me tell you how, glutamine is great, because so many cancer therapies can cause a leaky gut. Glutamine can help to take care of that problem, along with oral mucosal sores. You know, swishing glutamine in your mouth and some water is also helpful. And oral glutamine also lowers IGF-1 in a range that is considered clinically significant. IGF-1, or glucose factor 1, IGF-1, too much IGF-1 is also responsible for feeding cancer cells, and glutamine is shown to a significant degree to help lower IGF-1 levels. Yeah, still a conundrum. Trudy goes on to say, an integrative cancer doctor says she is more cautious, we don't have that doctor's name, is more cautious and would not recommend greater than 5 grams per day if someone has an active cancer. Another practitioner shared that long-term studies have not shown changes in mortality due to glutamine supplementation in cancer settings, but glutamine may be used for fuel by cancer cells. Glutamine is not as neurotoxic as has been suggested in the book Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills. That book was written by Dr. Russell Blaylock, and that he actually brought to light this conundrum about glutamine and the feeding of cancer. So what do we do for now? We have to be careful with our use of glutamine, especially in the setting of an active cancer. So next question that I have from Kristen is the ever popular topic of soy and soy protein isolates and breast cancer. We know that the research is varied depending on an individual's health history, stage in the life cycle. And Kristen is a fellow RD. She's actually a colleague of mine. She's getting a surge of referrals from their breast cancer center, and many are scared silly about eating soy protein isolate. A good recommendation that she's already giving is that, you know, to buy organic non-GMO. And she wants me to share my thoughts on this. Okay, so soybeans, you know, we basically take in soy in this country mostly in the form of tofu, tempeh, soybeans, edamame, all of those. There are a lot of beneficial phytochemicals in soy, protein kinase inhibitors to help keep cell growth and activity normal. There's phytosterols in soy that can help to regulate cholesterol. You know, phenolic acids are known antioxidants that can be helpful. But with soy isoflavones, meaning the protein portion of soy, they do contain weak phytoestrogens. These are the estrogen-like compounds found in plants. And the isoflavone levels, they vary depending on the type of soy food or product that you're eating, whether it's a tofu, soy milk. Now, our body's estrogen is much stronger, much, much stronger than the estrogens found in isoflavones in the soy. So if the weak soy substance replaces our natural high-strength estrogen in cells, then maybe the soy will protect against cancers that would prefer a stronger estrogen signal. I say that's fine if that is indeed what's happening. The thing is, we don't know. This is one school of thought, that the weaker estrogens in plant-based foods like soy can replace in our receptors, can take the place in our receptors of our stronger endogenous estrogen. That would be a good thing. That becomes then a net less effective estrogen in our bodies. But the other school of thought, and in my opinion, I believe the jury is still out on this, is that the weaker phytoestrogens in plant foods like soy may actually be adding to the burden of our already powerful endogenous estrogen that's made in the body. So we don't know. And you're probably thinking, well, what about the Asian women, the Japanese women who eat soy early in life and all of that, and there may be some protection? Well, there are actually some conundrums in that research because they also eat more fresh vegetables. Asian women in Asia or closer to their ideal body weight, not like in this country. They do tend to be more physically active, and they are likely to consume much less significant amounts of alcohol. And this, all of this, we have to factor in, we have to consider in our risk factors for breast cancer. So, what is the real answer here? While soy is a good source of protein, fiber, magnesium, copper, healthy fats, all of those kind of things, the protein isolates are primarily found in a soy protein powder. It can be found in breads and cereals, the vegetarian meatless food options, certain brands of veggie burgers, or the soy hot dogs. I think it's the isoflavones or the soy protein isolates that are more problematic. Also, if the person has hypothyroid, soy is one of the biggest goitrogens. Soy, and then I think followed by millet. So avoiding soy for anybody with hypothyroidism is critical. Staying away, I mean, if you nibble on a little edamame twice a month, no big deal, but you should no longer be an avid user of tofu and daily glasses of soy milk. So The other thing about soy is soy lecithin. There is a lot of soy in certain supplements, right? We're not talking about the protein bar with the soy isolates. We're talking now about soy lecithin, which is found in a lot of supplements like phosphatidylserine. Some vitamin K supplements are in a soy lecithin base. Let me set the record straight here that soy lecithin is extracted from soybean oil. It's used in numerous foods. It's even used like in chocolate as an emulsifier. And that's why the soy lecithin is used. It's a good emulsifier. The amounts that are used in supplements are generally insignificant, and they're not contributing any level of phytoestrogens. So when we're talking about soy, we need to discern, we need to make the distinction between the soy protein and protein isolates, the isoflavones, and soy lecithin. Soy lecithin is okay. That little bit that you're getting in that pill or capsule, or maybe the 3 to 5 to 10 capsules a day of certain things you're getting, that's not a whole lot of soy lecithin. So don't worry about it. And the lecithin is the fat portion of soy. That's really not the problem. It's more the isoflavones. Kristen, thank you very much for your questions. I will get to more questions, more of the questions, next week on another episode of Layla Weighs In every Friday. So I thank you for joining me today on this Intelligent Medicine podcast. This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.